Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollack Legal Show, the only show of its kind. We are injury attorneys, and we bring the show to you to answer your questions and solve your problems on any legal subject. Bell and Pollack, go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can call us right now on any legal subject, 303-713-8255, 713-8255. And in the mountains, welcome. The telephone number there is 970-457-1009. All right, we got two new books at the publisher right now. One's called Legal Game Plan. You must have a legal game plan. This is an eye-opening book. Those insurance companies that try to beat your injury claim have their own legal game plan. Believe me, they do. They have their own strategy. They have their own scripts on how they ask you questions. They have their own procedures and policies. And they're not there to help you. They're there to help themselves. Our other book, brand new, Motorcycle Injuries and Colorado Motorcycle Accident Law. The publisher says it's going to be ready to go probably by the end of this month, maybe a little bit sooner. We had one call this week about our motorcycle book. But what we're going to talk about today is, you know, you're driving your car home, it's dark, you get rear-ended, you can't see too well, you're kind of dazed and confused, and the car or truck that hits you leaves the scene, and you can't identify them, and they're gone, and there's nobody else around, and there's no eyewitnesses, and that you don't know who it was. Brad, what do you do at the scene? At the scene when you got involved in a hit and run?
Well, you know, a lot of people are just going to think, well, there's nothing I can do and leave, and that's the wrong thing to do. You need to report that as if an accident, not as if, that you need to report that an accident happened. A lot of times you've been hit, you want to stay at the scene and even have the police come out. Now, sometimes police may say, well, there's nobody there, we're not coming out. Other times they're going to come out. But if you can have the police come out, have them come out, have them document where the accident occurred, how you got hit, where the debris is on the street from the accident having occurred, the broken light or the items that fell off the cars. Relive the accident with the police officer. Maybe if you're in a residential neighborhood, yeah, not maybe if it's light, maybe late that night, you won't have a chance, but maybe the next day you're going to want to have somebody go and check with every neighbor and see if they saw anything. One of the things you've got to remember that quite often you've got to be able to document what happened in that accident to your own insurance company. If there's any skid marks on the road that was left from the accident, you're going to want to get those. You want to make sure you can document that an accident actually happened, that you were actually in the car, that there were people in the car, sometimes there are accidents where there's no contact. And you want to make sure you can identify if you run off the road, where you ran off the road, if there's any tire marks. So just thinking, well, they left, there's nothing I can do, and going home and I'll call the police tomorrow was not a good idea.
Well, the real reason that you want to be able to do this, and what Brad said is exactly correct, is don't assume that just automatically, well, I got to go home, or I'll go home and I'll take care of this later, or the insurance company will take care, or your insurance company will take care of it later. They will always ask you, did you call the police? They will always ask you if you have an accident report, and it facilitates, if not, is downright essential that you call the police. First thing you have to do is take care of yourself medically, of course. That's first. But if you can, you're going to take pictures, you're going to call the police, you're going to have an accident report, you're going to get this done. Right now, join us live on KHOW is Alice. Good morning, Alice from Fort Collins. How can we help you?
Oh, good morning. I'm a grandma who bought her grandson a car. I have my name on it along with his on the title and the registration, and he had a fender bender in Front Range parking lot, and he did a hit and run. And I want him to be responsible. However, the person, there was a witness, so I've gotten a letter, but they're coming after me, I guess, because they realize my grandson, being a student, doesn't have any resources, but I do. Because my name is on the registration and title along with his, what is my culpability?
Okay, so first of all, on that situation, I understand you're the co-owner, and there's insurance on the car, correct?
No, he had no permission to be driving it, but I never had a key. He's 20, and I couldn't wrestle him to take the key away from him. He had an accident a year before, and they canceled him off my insurance because it was, there's quite a bit of damage. Luckily, no one had gotten hurt, but it was his fault. They canceled him off my insurance, and he lost his driver's license. And he would drive anyway.
Okay, but Alice, you're a co-owner, but you did not give him permission to drive the car, right?
Oh, no. Not ever since he lost his license and the insurance, right?
Okay, but did you have car insurance on the car?
No, I have a car, a different car, and my insurance refused to insure the car that I had bought for him.
Okay, so Brad, we've got a situation where there doesn't appear to be any insurance on the car, but he's a co-owner of the car, and she says she doesn't give him permission.
Alice, your grandson does not live with you, correct?
Periodically, he grew up here, and he's 20 now, and he comes and goes whenever he feels like it.
Okay,
I don't know where he always is, but he does get mail here.
Where was the car kept?
He just drove it all the time. It really wasn't kept anywhere. He'd park it wherever, like at his dad's or at his friend's, wherever he was. If he was here, you know, he never parked it. He was always driving it.
Okay, so here's the thing. You're not responsible for his negligence with regard to the car, but there could be some responsibility for negligent entrustment or negligent supervision of the car, although that may or may not have validity in a case where your grandson is a part owner of the car, because for you to deny a part owner or an owner the access to the car takes more than just saying, well, I own the car, because they own it too. But the most they could look at you is some responsibility. First of all, it's going to be important that you tell the truth to these people and say, that was my grandson who was driving the car. Here's where he is. Here's where you can go talk to him. Here's what you can do. Here's and once again, make demand on him to give you the keys to the car. And it may take some action to actually get yourself out of ownership of that car, because you want to get out of ownership.
So at one point he agreed to turn it over to me and let me sell it. So I'm kind of in between. I don't know what to do, because I paid for the thing, and if I turn it totally over to his ownership, he could sell it or drive it without a license or insurance. I can't wrestle him. He's 20.
Right. You know? Okay, Alice. But the question is, what is your responsibility? So Brad is exactly right. He's negligent. That's a stupid act, just to leave or whatever, hit and run. So he's negligent. So that doesn't necessarily automatically attach liability to you. But where Brad said you might be in the picture with regard to negligent entrustment, but if you've been fighting him, you don't want him to have the car, and he's just too big, he's just too old, he doesn't listen to you, you can't take him down. So that's a big important factor in the analysis of liability here.
And you want to get ready to document all the efforts you made to tell him to return the car, return the keys, don't drive the car. And then there's going to have to be some action taken now, Alice, as far as getting yourself out of title and getting the car turned over. I mean, there's some things that can be done. It's going to take quite a bit of work to go to court, maybe even, and get an lawful order that says that car, the possession of the car, needs to be turned over to you.
Alice, you need some help. We're going to help you this week, okay?
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Right. I'm going to put you on hold. If you give Kevin your information, we'll be glad to give you a call. We got to sort this out for you. There's some more legal analysis and work to be done on that, all right?
I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call. You're listening to the Bell and Pollack Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack, we're here for you. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can go there. You can get any of our books free. We'll be right back.
The program tonight has been hijacked by listeners.
This is Michael Brown.
Here's a life lesson. Get off social media. Get off Facebook. Get off Twitter. Get off the interwebs. Get off the internet. Turn off your TV. Just don't turn off your radio, okay? But turn everything else off.
The Michael Brown Show.
It is liberating.
I'm free.
It's absolutely liberating.
Afternoons on your ride home. 4 to 7. This is Denver's Talk Station. 630 KHOW.
Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We are injury attorneys, but this show is for you on any legal subject. 303-713-8255. Don't forget about our new books. They're coming out there at the publisher right now. One is a definitive guideline on motorcycle accidents and motorcycle law in Colorado. And the other one, we've been working on this book a long time. It's our legal game plan, trademark protected legal game plan. Brad and I put our over 30 years of experience into this book. And we give you the tips, and we give you the myths, and we give you instructions, and you can also ask us any question you want. And why do you need a legal game plan? We say it forever. The insurance companies have their own legal game plan, period. They do, no matter what the situation is. They have it, and it's not in your favor. It's against you. You need to know who's on your side. And by the way, you know, if you're going to cook or bake a recipe, you'd have to follow the instructions. You have to have a game plan. If you're going to put a product together that you get in the mail, you have to have the instructions. You have to follow them. And that's critical. And that's critical that you have a legal game plan. Right now, join us live is Joe from Golden. Good morning, Joe. What can we do for you?
Hey, are you guys familiar with the case that just happened in Las Vegas where the four people were indicted on 270 counts of fraud and racketeering?
I'm not...
Her name was April Lynn Parks. She was a guardian lawyer, and her husband was a lawyer. But anyway, she was on the lam up in Pennsylvania. But on the racketeering charges, we got a similar thing going on here. If they award the charges that was supposed to be an inheritance, what's the tax consequences on three times the damages? Do you know?
Okay, so all right. So the RICO charge, same thing going on here. Then they award the damages because of a lost inheritance, right?
Right.
And then, on top of that, you get the three times the damages, right?
And lawyer's fees, yeah.
And lawyer's fees.
The damage. They're trying to settle out of court with three times, but it's a real similar deal. It came out on the Fox TV. It was the same thing there. It took 2 years from the time it was showed on Fox TV here, and it took 2 years from the time they showed it there. But
right.
Now, like they got 200. It's a different deal than the other public administrator. This is a new one, but it's starting to snowball, and it's coming, you know, it's reaching into the judges and everything else. It's coming here. But they're trying to settle with this guy, but he doesn't understand. You know, he's a little bit at a disadvantage. But
okay, well, let's break it down to its components, Joe. That's a great, great question. So component number one is the inheritance money, right? Let's just talk about that for a second. So if part of this money, whatever it's going to be paid, is the inheritance money, it doesn't change flavors. It doesn't change the nature of the animal. It was inheritance money to begin with. It always is, and it always will be. So the inheritance tax laws apply to that inheritance component, right? And I don't think you're going to be able to change the flavor of that situation.
Now you get to the
other part.
The only thing you might get is you know, and normally if you had to pay money to get it, you can offset the costs and expenses of getting it, if that makes sense. So if my inheritance would have been $1 million and I had to pay a lawyer $250,000 to go get that inheritance because of the problems, I'm going to be able to claim probably $750,000, or I'll have to claim $1 million, then claim $250,000 for the cost of collecting it. Okay. In the Colorado or the Congress, by Revenue Code Section 104A2 in 1989, generally made punitive damages taxable in cases that did not involve physical injury and physical sickness. And when you're talking about three times the amount, normally that's a penalty or punitive damage. And so normally that's going to be a taxable event. And you're going to have to report that on your taxes, and there's going to be a taxable consequence.
And the bottom line, Joe, is that under the Internal Revenue Code, it operates under what the law calls and lawyers call a replacement of capital theory, meaning, bunch of fancy legal words, meaning if you were injured, you lost something, you lost your function, you lost something, and if you get money that replaces that capital, meaning your injured arm, your injured neck, your injured back. And the Internal Revenue Code says when you have a replacement of capital injury, then that's not taxable. Now, when you get to the other part, then there's no replacement of capital theory that automatically applies, as Brad just said.
Now, I do want to...
The mental aspect of seeing how corrupt everything has been.
Well, and when you talk about the mental aspect, what you're going to talk about is if you're getting compensation for a physical injury, and a mental injury can be is considered within the physical injury area.
Correct.
The amount that's compensated for the mental aspect is not going to be taxable. And yeah. And you know,
I already had PTSD, and then they just doubled down on them bad.
Right. Now I do want to caution also that when we talk about, okay, you've gotten money to replace your losses. Normally what you're going to find is like if somebody comes in or goes to your house and breaks into your house and steals stuff, there's a chance you can write that off on your taxes also. If you
That's
have a business loss.
I don't want to happen to him, but it was the public administrator and the judges. But anyway, yeah, go ahead.
Right. Well, I'm just saying if you have a loss from a theft or business loss or some type of action that's occurred, normally you have the ability to write that off. Now, you know, there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through because the IRS is going to want you to be able to prove that it occurred. Did you file a police report? And can you document the loss and can you document the value of the item that you lost? And in a RICO action or when you have the things going on with public administrators, they're stealing inheritances. Obviously, you haven't claimed the inheritance because you never got it. Once you get it, you're going to be fine if you fit, you know, then you're going to be, as Gary said, you're going to be under probate law and the inheritance law and what's taxable. But the windfall, that's kind of what Congress looks at it as, is windfall. They're not designed to compensate victims. And because they're windfall, the government looks and says that's taxable. The courts have upheld it.
But Joe, I got to say one thing here because you say they're trying to settle with this gentleman who's got PTSD, etc. There's a lot of elements to our conversation this morning. I hope, and our conversation cannot replace a detailed analysis and advice either from a tax advisor or attorney. But I hope this person, whoever it is, has professional help, both tax wise and legal wise, because if you're going to settle, it also depends on what the settlement language says. As to how certain things are handled.
Trying to push it. They're trying to get them to keep it criminal. They want these people, like, they've got the people jailed in the Las Vegas thing now, all four
right.
of them, and they tried to run. I mean, he's afraid that's kind of same thing going to happen here, that they're going to try to go back to the East Coast where they're from and hide out. So they're trying to get them to settle, but he wants them criminally charged, so he's at a crossroads because he got run over so bad on the deal.
Right.
But
does he have professional advice, Joe?
Yeah, he had three congressional investigations on his case. The IOG at the Veterans Affairs Administration and stuff.
And his attorney may very well, when things are happening, might want to see how they're going to classify the money that gets paid. I mean, if the money
his attorney has actually, his last attorney has been involved. They said he staged the litigation with the other attorney. And he had already got property out of a probate case, so that's not a good thing. Because,
so you're saying the attorneys were involved?
The attorney made him sign a release to take a settlement originally when he didn't want to because they knew he was incapacitated. So when it finally went criminal, they've involved his attorney for staging the litigation and forcing him to. He's an at-risk adult, basically. So
right.
It's
really a mess.
Convoluted.
But, you bet it's a mess, and it's very complicated.
And it goes all the way, like I said, to the judges, and it's.
And so, what's going to be the taxable consequence is very, very difficult to determine when you don't know the breakdown of the compensation. But generally, if you're receiving money in the form of punitive damages. And that's what a lot of this is, then that money is going to have a taxable consequence.
So the bottom line legal approach, Joe, and you had a great question this morning. The bottom line legal approach is any lawyer in that situation would take the settlement or the payout or whatever it's going to be, break it down to its components, cover it in the settlement agreement, have legal authority to back up how you approach this section, this component, and so when the IRS comes knocking at the door, here's the answers, here's the proof, here's how it was negotiated, here's the language, and here's the law. You see what I'm saying?
Sure. But anyway, if you guys get a chance, look up that latest thing with April Lynn Parks in Las Vegas.
All right, we'll do, buddy.
April Lynn Parks, we'll do it.
Thank you.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you. Don't forget to go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can get a copy of our book there, or any of our books. You can listen to these podcasts. It's an information-loaded website. There's a button there that you can hit and listen to a 30-minute show on what you need to know before you have the first phone call to the adjuster after an accident. And there's a button there that you can hit as to what you need to do right now today to prepare for an accident, which we hope never happens to you or anybody. Don't forget about the hit and run. That was our key question for today. We got a book on that called Cowards of the Street. Hit and run because they are cowards of the street. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Right now, we're going to talk to Eric at Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
Good. What's cooking?
I got a couple things going on. We're going to start off with our breakfast special for the next 2 weeks. That's going to be a Greek omelet. Now, that's a two-egg omelet. We're going to load that up with feta cheese, baby spinach, diced tomatoes. We're going to serve that with a side of hash browns. You can get flour tortillas or our scratch-made pancakes on the side. That's going to be our breakfast special. I highly recommend the pancakes, by the way. They're buttermilk. They're scratch-made. I would go with that. And our lunch special is going to be a blue cheeseburger. Now, that's a six-ounce Angus burger. We're going to cook it to the temperature of your choice. We're going to load that up with blue cheese crumbles. You can add our homemade chips or our waffle-cut fries for a dollar more. That's going to be the lunch special all the way through the 24th of this month. And on Mondays and Fridays, don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, it's all-you-can-eat taco and burrito bar. It's all-you-can-eat. It's only $7.99. That actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. Cannot pass that up. And the weather's kind of playing games with us. I'm not real sure. The deck's ready to go, but the carafes for $12.50 of mimosas are definitely ready to go. We have that going on. We've got the flat screens on. We got basketball on. Tons of things to come check out. So come down to Caitlin's. You can't miss out.
Okay, Eric, where are you located?
We're at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue, and that's one block east of Collar Boulevard, and that's in the Glendale Shopping Center, guys.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Caitlin's Restaurant, you love it every bite of the way. Bell and Pollock Legal Show, 303-713-8255 in the mountains, 970-457-1009. And don't forget about our website, championsofthepeople.com. We got new books coming out. We've talked about that. Right now we're going to talk to Margaret from Littleton about adverse possession. Good morning, Margaret.
Hi.
What can we do for you, ma'am?
I think I have an easy one for you.
A slam dunk. Let's go.
Adverse possession, if someone has allowed that to go on for many, many years, what's the limit of the years in order to establish adverse possession?
Well, it's if they're not doing it under color of title, which means they don't have any kind of title or any official
right.
government document, it's 18 years in the state of Colorado.
18,
huh?
That's
yes.
a while.
Yes.
Okay, then here's a real question. Suppose it exists. Suppose it's been established. And then, for some reason, it has been breached. Then how long a period of breach will disestablish the adverse possession?
Well, the adverse possession must be hostile, and it's not some kind of actual hostility, but it has to be against the right of the owner. It has to be
yeah.
actual. In other words, they have to be exercising control of the property, exclusive in the possession of the trespasser alone, open and notorious. And the one you just asked, it must be continuous. If there's
so
a time,
if it's breached at all, then you have to start all over.
You start all over.
Okay, that's what I needed to know.
All right, and if you have access to the internet, look up. We just put in CRS, all in caps.
Okay.
And put in 38-41-101.
Wow.
And there's a group of them. There's some after that that'll tell you about it, but that's where you can find the legal authority that tells you what it is. But that continuous
41-101.
Right, that continuous is pretty important.
Well, there was a famous case, and then the law changed in 2008 because of that case out of Boulder.
I remember that.
Yeah, I think it involved a judge, if I remember right. So that changed the law, and so basically, I mean, there were a lot of changes, but basically, the change was there used to be presumptions In other words, presumptions in favor of the alleged trespasser or the person who wanted to claim adverse possession, the presumptions pretty much went away, and then a strict proof requirement. But
I see.
But, and so Brad was right, if you operate under color of title, which usually means you pay taxes, the trespasser pays taxes on the property, and that's a 7 years, and then if you don't, then it's 18 years. But you say if there's a break in this continuous time period, that you've got to be ready and able to prove the break, prove there's not been continuous possession. And I hope we're answering your questions, are we?
Yes, you are. Thank you very much.
Okay.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Thank you for the call. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, we're here for you. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, but our radio lives, right here for you. We have a line open, 303-713-8255. Join us now is Linda about a MedPay auto accident question. Good morning, Linda.
Yes, good morning. I have two questions. I was in an accident where I was run off the road just before Thanksgiving, and the other driver did go to jail, but she didn't have insurance. So my I have good uninsured motorist coverage.
Good.
But it's a little bit hard for me to understand. They said to me, so I have a question about what subrogate means.
Okay.
And then I also want to know if in the future, so I've been homebound since before Thanksgiving, and I'm just about able to walk now, and I have hardware in my ankles. So and I'm not sure what impact that will have on me in the future. I think the doctor said I have it accelerated the onset of the arthritis in my ankle. And I'm not sure. I walk 3 miles a day. I haven't been able to do that. I'm not sure how well I'm going to be able to do things like that into the future. So, so my question is, what does subrogate mean? And will the insurance pay me without a lawyer for future disability?
Okay, I'm going to take on part of that, and then Brad's going to take on part of it. So,
okay.
All right, and so this problem that you're having, not being able to walk, et cetera, you say that was a result of this accident, this incident?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, so then it's connected to that, and that person didn't have any insurance, and so you said you had good UM coverage, UIM
yes.
coverage. All right.
Yes.
So that places you in the ballpark of making a claim against your own insurance company under the UM coverage, which is why we preach it's so important for all of your damages. All of your damage would include medical bills, your injuries, quality of life changes like not being able to walk, past, present, and future. So if this is going to affect you two more years in the future, that's compensable. If it's going to affect you the rest of your life, that's compensable. And so now it's to the subrogate. So that's very difficult to prove with these insurance companies because they want to cut it off somewhere. Now, Brad's going to address the subrogation issue with you.
Right. The subrogation issue is so you know what subrogation is. When you got in your accident and as you've been going through your accident, you probably have some insurance, health insurance, that's paying for some of your care in some of your medical care. That insurance, and let's say it's Blue Cross Blue Shield, just out of the blue. I'm not saying it is, but let's pretend that's who it is for right now, okay? Blue Cross Blue Shield has been paying this money, and they've got a provision in their in their insurance policy that says, in the event you've been injured as a result of the negligence of another person, and you recover from any source, including your UIM, if you recover from any source, any money for those injuries, then they have the right to subrogate, or you must pay them the amounts that they had to pay for your care and for your medical care before you can put any money in your pocket. Now, that's the beginning rule, but there's exceptions to that, and one of them is the make whole rule that says if you have not been made whole, then when you receive money from your car insurance company, who is compensating you for the negligence of another, then within 60 days you have to send out a make whole letter that says you have not been made whole. Here's why you haven't been made whole, and you have to follow certain rules under the statute. And when you follow those rules, then the insurance company, Blue Cross Blue Shield, would have to seek some type of mediation or arbitration to determine whether or not you've been made whole. So basically, it starts with they have the right to get your money that you're recovering from your insurance in a subrogation right to be paid back for the money they're giving you for your injuries.
But you know, to be clear, subrogation applies to them paying your medical bills.
Right.
So not to other categories of damages. If you're paid for your pain and suffering, your physical injuries, they don't have any right to that. And that's always the fight. But let's say you had $10,000 of medical bills. Let's just say that. And then so this Blue Cross Blue Shield, your health insurance company, under our example, then they would want their money back that they paid for medical bills. And then comes the fight with the make-whole doctrine, which I won't repeat, but Brad just went through it. It sounds kind of complicated. One of your questions was, do you have the right, and should you do this, and are they going to pay you for future damages without an attorney, right?
Yes.
Okay.
They're not going to pay you enough.
They're not going to pay you enough, I guarantee you that.
Yeah. They may say they're going to pay you some, but them the fact they're even bringing up subrogation and not talking to you about things, you need an attorney. You have a significant injury. I don't know how much your uninsured motorist is, your uninsured motorist. We can talk about that with you off the air. But you need an attorney, and you need one to make sure that, for instance, don't you dare pay any of that subrogation money without talking to an attorney.
Well, don't you dare settle.
Don't you dare settle. Any of that without talking to an attorney. Your initial consultation with an attorney is free. You can get set up and get in and be given all this information specifically.
Yeah,
I tell you what, Linda, we can help you. You've got a fairly complicated but solvable, resolvable issue. But I so wish we had our legal game plan book published right now. I so wish it because I would probably hand deliver the thing to you so that you could read it. But since we don't, it won't be done probably till the end of March. We'll be glad to call you off the air. We'll help you and give you that advice and point you in the right direction. Would that be okay?
Yes, it would be great. Thank you so much.
Okay, Linda, thank you very much for calling us. And I'm going to put you on hold. Give Kevin your information, ma'am.
Okay, yes.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you. We've been doing this for years. We were looking at it the other day. I think we've solved approximately over 5,000 people's questions over the years. And we were trying to figure out exactly how that worked on our show, but it's been thousands of people that we try to help. 303-713-8255, Bell and Pollock, because we are your champions of the people. Back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell and Brad Pollock, we're here for you. 303-713-8255. And don't forget about the show that follows us, the Consumer Real Estate Show. Barry and Larry, they're incredible experts. They're very knowledgeable. People have questions on real estate matters. And when you have a real estate contract and you have questions on inspections, title work, title analysis, what do you do with inspections? How do you do HVAC? You know, when most people sell their house, then they always want the certification of the HVAC to come up. How's that handled? How's your replacement handled? How's the notice of repair and correction handled? Those gentlemen are experts, and they can help you all the way. And, you know, our subject of the day today was this hit-and-run situation. We do have a book on it, but we got to one part of it, which was liability, what you do at the scene. You have to call the police, but we didn't get to the other part yet on how you handle the claim and the UM claim and what you need to do. Join us right now is Sandy from Brighton. Good morning, Sandy. What can we do for you, ma'am?
Good morning. I chatted with you guys last Saturday. Remember I had the I was going to small claims court against the restoration company.
Right, and I think you got a default judgment, and then they got their attorneys, and you had several hearings, and the court refused to set it aside.
Yep, well, they set it aside yesterday.
Set it aside. What was the reason they set it aside for?
For Sedera.
Excuse me? What'd you say?
They for that Sedera, C-D-A-R-A law.
Right.
They had their attorney there, and I didn't think you could have attorneys in small claims.
So the attorney got to speak in small claims court?
Yep, he sure did.
And it wasn't county court, right, Sandy? It was small claims court.
No, it was small claims court, yep.
Okay, what was the attorney's argument a little bit?
The attorney's argument said that I didn't contact them in regards to the issues that I had with my basement. I said, yeah, I sent him emails. Well, he brought up this sheet with the Colorado It says Colorado revised status of the Construction Defect Action Reform Act. And supposedly in there, you have to either send them a certified letter or hand deliver it. I sent them numerous emails on how to get this situation fixed. And of course, the judge that was there, he looked at my emails and kind of snubbed them aside, and he more or less favored the attorney.
Okay, and so it looks like it was a strict construction of the statute by the judge. I'll get to the attorney issue. If I can't get it to it live on the air, we're going to get it off there. But it looks like the judge went through a strict construction of the statute. The statute says certified mail, and did the judge say the emails don't count, or did just act like they didn't count?
He acted like they didn't count. And that attorney questioned me. I got put under oath. And he says, did you send any certified mail stating your claims? And I said, no, I didn't know I had to. I said, I sent numerous emails. He goes, did you hand deliver any? I said, no. I didn't say no. I said, I sent numerous emails on it asking how we can get this resolved. I said, the general manager even hung up on me. I said, when I asked him how to get it resolved, obviously the emails didn't matter. I said, well, I didn't know you had to send it through certified mail. I thought you were a legit company. And then when I asked the judge, I said, well, what about this? I said, all the damage they caused in my house. I said, I got pictures here. I said, I have half-inch carpet padding. I said, they replaced it with 3/8-inch. I said, how is that correct? He goes, we'll get to that in a minute. We never got to that. It was like he didn't even want to hear my side of the story.
All right, and so, you know, this law was changed that we're talking about. It was House Bill 1166 that was changed, and it sounds like it was a very technical decision. But I'd like to ask you, I'm not sure from our conversation last week, is how many court appearances did you have before this one where, and I thought you told us last week that the judge previously refused to set this aside.
He did. Okay.
How many?
I only had one.
One.
And that was the original. And they failed to show up, and they were going on to their papers that, oh, they had emailed in, you know, their reasonings why they didn't show up. So then they got an appeal. Well, in the appeal, that's when they stated this, that I was in fault of the Sedera, and that's why he brought it. He let them come into court again.
Right, and Sedera is the House Bill 1166 I was talking about, and it does have the mandatory and it was designed, right or wrong, I'm not giving you our opinion on it, but it was designed to eliminate multiple class action suits before that, so it had to give notice. And one of the problems beforehand, it doesn't help you right now, but I want to explain this. One of the problems beforehand is I think the builders and contractors thought they were getting hit with lawsuits without notice and without knowing anything about it, without an opportunity to solve the problem. And Sedera 1166 covered that. But so what did the judge finally rule? That you didn't give the notice, or you didn't give the proper notice?
Yeah.
What was the ruling?
Yeah, that was the proper noting that I didn't give the notice, and that it's moved to county court now.
All right. And what was the monetary amount in dispute? Please remind me.
Mine was, I did the $7,500, the max to cover, you know, to get it my basement put back together. Well, they come in with a counterclaim saying that it was $15,000, but they didn't give no reason for the $15,000. Well, now they want to move to county court with that $15,000 in addition to this $6,900 or whatever they said I owed them.
Right. And so that's been removed to county court?
Yep.
And is there going to be a new trial?
Yep.
Okay, now, I haven't solved in my mind yet your issue or question about the attorney being in small claims court, and I'm going to have to get to that one off the air, but have you reset this case for trial, or is it going to be reset for trial?
It's going to be reset, I'm guessing.
Okay.
What she told me is you'll get papers in the mail.
All right, so it looks like the judge went under the Sedera Act, the 1166, which does have the technical requirements to give notice. But that argument was never presented in the previous hearings, Sandy?
No, it was not. Nothing was ever brought up. And then I asked them that. I said, well, didn't they waive their rights when they didn't show up? And he says, well, and when they sent the appeal, that's when he went back. It was kind of confusing because the judge was all over the place. And he said it went back to, where if they had an issue or if they could find a fault, that they could bring it back in to argue their point.
Okay, so you, big picture is you sued, you got a default judgment, nobody showed up, then went back to court to set it aside, and they didn't win that set aside, right?
Yep.
And now
yep.
they got attorneys in small claims court, and your hearing and your decision was Friday?
Yep, yesterday.
Okay, well, I'm worried about timing for appeal. I'm worried about appeal. It's going to take a little bit of effort to dissect this for you, but you made pretty good argument when you just said to me, wasn't it waived before, right?
Yeah.
Did you argue that to the court this time?
Yeah, he says, wasn't that waived? And he says, well, it was brought up in the appeal. Well, I don't know anything about the law, you know, that's not me. And he sidestepped it, and he didn't really answer me on it.
Okay, there may be a basis for you to still appeal this situation right here, right now. And don't do it right now, but you may have to order a copy of the transcript. But you're going to have some legal analysis further. So I'm going to put you on hold. I'm going to be gone this week. I would call you myself, but I'm going to have you given a call because you might be able to appeal what just happened on Friday. Okay?
Okay.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold, Sandy. Give Kevin your information, and we'll see if we can help you further.
Okay.
Thank you for the call, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell and Brad Pollock. It's the only show of its kind. You can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. If you go to championsofthepeople.com, you can listen to any of our podcasts. And as you know, we do injury shows. That's not this show. We do injury shows on a variety of stations here in the Denver metro area and in the mountains. You can listen to those podcasts. We cover everything from quality of life damages to how do you prove damages. And we've been doing a series on our injury shows of how insurance companies actually attack your case to beat your case and win your case against you. And that's been critical. And next week's show on the injury shows are coming up with regard to the so-called independent medical examinations. And I mean, what are those? These insurance companies, once you've been injured, try to get you to go see their doctor under certain procedures. And their doctors are high-paid, hired guns. Some of these doctors make over $1 million a year per insurance company or $500,000 a year per insurance company testifying against injured people. How do you like that one? And do you know that you cannot bring up insurance, the word insurance, in trials? There's a lot that we cover on those shows. This show is for you. Our other shows are injury shows, specialty injury shows to give you information. And don't forget about our legal game plan. Don't forget about our new books coming up, Motorcycle Accidents and Legal Game Plan. Bell and Pollock, because we are your champions of the people.